D asks you to please be quiet and courteous to others and silence your cell phones now.
Oh, hi. I'm sitting here in a movie theater waiting for the previews to begin. I'm Kurt Bruner, your host, and welcome to the podcast. I thought this would be a great place to introduce you to the concept of movie night chats, which is something my older boys and I have used as part of our spiritual formation routine for quite some time now. That's right, I said spiritual formation. Oh, hang on a second, the first preview is about to start.
I know this house isn't perfect, but we can make it work.
Who was stuck here?
Oh, the house? Yeah, it's great. I feel like big creepy houses in the middle of nowhere.
Stop acting like a jerk!
But like any old house,
check it out.
This one has its secrets.
Now back to spiritual formation and what that has to do with movies. Well, think about it. Stories have incredible power to influence how we think about the world around us, often on a subconscious level that we may not recognize. Well, for example, C.S. Lewis, he said that his journey toward God started when he was young and he read a fantasy book that he had picked up on a train station.
Do not dare to read this book.
Well, in our generation, we tend to experience stories in a big way through movies more than through books. And those stories have a significant influence on our beliefs and our perceptions. So when my older boys reached their teen years, we shifted from using family night activities to discuss spiritual themes to movie night chats, and it's worked out very well.
A rare few are, quite frankly, to be feared.
Maybe I'm odd, but I love watching film previews. Part of the reason is they help me assess which movies might contain content that can trigger a meaningful discussion with my teenagers whenever we schedule our next movie night chat.
Give me the book!
You're surrounded by goblins!
There's no such thing as goblins!
Well, this edition of the podcast, my goal is to simply introduce you to the concept of movie nights as a way to foster spiritual formation discussions in your home, as well as a tool for enhancing the relationship. Now, if you're a teen, you may want to initiate this with your parents. If you're a parent, you may want to do the same with your teen. If you're a grandparent, with your grandkids. And so we're going to help you think through how you might get that started and give you a little bit of a push start. All right, so here we go.
The Spiderwick Chronicles.
Did I hit somebody?
Yes.
Hey guys.
Hey.
For a number of months, I facilitated a monthly gathering of parents and their teens coming together to begin the movie night chats process.
All-time favorite movie, did I get yours yet?
We enjoyed getting to know one another and talking about movies.
Movie Henry V because of the acting. Pride and Prejudice.
That's two.
Sorry, Pride and Prejudice.
She took yours.
Princess Bride. Ever After.
Lord of the Rings. All-time favorite movie. Braveheart.
My Best Friend's Wedding.
Flyboys.
Lord of the Rings.
Anywhere from 10 to 20 families would come together at a house after they had watched an assigned film together for discussion. Then as a large group, we did what each family had done themselves, diving into the themes and the scenes from the film.
A Time to Kill. And she looked at you, her husband, when she said
it. I knew.
The Patriot.
Really? Is it because of Mel Gibson?
I like the story. American history.
Now, before I give specific examples of some of these movie night discussions and hear from some of the families who've participated, I thought I should give you a quick overview of the process itself. It's pretty simple. First, we select a movie that seems to touch on themes of importance to a thoughtful Christian, and there are a lot of places you can get advice on some of those movies, including a website we set up, which I'll tell you about at the end. Second, we watch the movie together. Usually we're stuffing our faces with popcorn and soda, or if it's something we're watching at home because we rented it, we prefer fresh-baked cookies and milk. Mom, take note of that. Finally, at the end of the movie, I just ask a few questions that help us discuss underlying themes from the film. We also tend to describe specific scenes that each of us found particularly interesting because they touched on a spiritual matter or just raised a question in our mind that we thought would be worth discussing. Now, we found in our family that some of our most meaningful spiritual discussions with our older children occur during movie night chats, sometimes after watching a film that was antagonistic to our beliefs, because it forces us to think about what we might otherwise have just passively accepted. Now, we don't always agree during our discussion, but the conversation always strengthens our relationship and always sharpens our thinking.
I think after our very first one, Contact was the first one, after the discussion, it was hard to watch any movie the same again. Because you're sitting and asking those questions, or it was more aware of things that they were saying or doing that went against or would push a different worldview.
I watched Spider-Man 3 that with my dad,
yeah,
and
we talked about that.
Like, he gets rid of the blackness,
in a church tower,
and so it's just a lot of minor details. We start talking about all the minor details that might relate to Christianity.
It's really neat to talk about movies. My dad will see something that I said, well, I view it in this way. Now, we'll end up coming to the same conclusion, but maybe we'll come about it a different way, or we'll maybe not quite agree on a certain scene. I think it's a good thing to do, because when you do that, it helps strengthen, A, your family, and just that they can talk about stuff like that means that it's a good environment for a family, and B, that you're learning from each other, and that you're starting to see what the other people think about certain things and how they think. I mean, you get to open your eyes and not just blindly accept a worldview, and you can look and see it for what it really is and not just have Hollywood brainwash you.
So is it weird watching movies with your parents and then talking about them?
No, I like it. Yeah. I think it's fun. Because I love my parents.
Yeah. Do they have as good insights as you do?
Oh, they have better insights.
You have any insights?
I have better insights. I have better insights than all of them.
Not incense, insights. We're not talking about your smell. We're talking about your perception of things.
Oh, man.
Oh, sorry.
I always have gone to a movie and it'll either send chills up my spine or there's something about it that will just disturb me, and being able to break it up and decipher what the worldview is and discuss it as a family, it completely changes how you look at a movie again.
Okay, Mom, any thoughts?
I go for pure entertainment.
So you don't tend to want to discuss it?
I don't tend to want to discuss it because I sit there and look at it. Now, since we've been doing this, I'm like, ooh, I never thought of it that way. So I probably do look at it different now, but not before. It was pure entertainment before.
So is it weird watching and discussing movies with your parents?
Kind of.
Yeah. Tell me why it's weird.
I don't know. It's just kind of
Dad,
awkward.
Dad, stop looking at him. He's telling me why it's weird.
It's not weird. It's just...
Hasn't it helped you to, when you see a film now, instead of just letting your mind go, now you can think about what the people that have created it, what they're trying to get across, and is it something that I agree with, or is it worth
putting into your brain and body, or is it something that you need to think about and decide, is it really... worth your time and effort.
I mean, do you think that now that you, when you see films, or is...
They set you up. I want to hear the truth from you. Is it weird watching movies with your parents and talking about them?
Well, sort of. Not really.
Now, one of the things that some teens will find and parents will find is that they're not used to talking to each other about these kinds of issues. Movie nights is one of the ways you can begin to open up dialogue and perhaps move past that awkward feeling.
Is that weird, watching and talking about movies with your family?
Well, it can be if you're not used to it, because I know sometimes it's hard for me to open up my family, because, it's just how I am, but it'll kind of stretch you. The goth side of me says that I love Tim Burton movies because they're so great, with the Jack Skellington and the Sweeney Todd and the great, great fantasy and art that he makes.
Do you like any of the movies he just mentioned?
No.
Yeah, I think so. So how do you find...
They're not the type of movies that we watch all together.
Do you think watching and talking about the movies made you come closer together? Relationally?
It opened me up a little bit.
Now that we've heard from some of the families who are doing Family Night Chats, let's take a look at two movies in particular that we looked at that you may want to try in your home as you kick off this routine. Now, one of our favorite films is called Dead Poets Society. It was actually nominated for the Best Picture in 1989, and it stars Robin Williams. Quick overview, the film is set in the 1950s. It's a preparatory school on the East Coast. And immediately you get a sense that this is a school that the wealthy send their children to in order to move them on to greater things in life. And very strict, very rigid, very set in its ways.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys, the light of knowledge.
At the beginning of the film, you meet the boys who become key in the story, and you meet the teacher, Mr. Keating, who is played by Robin Williams.
As you know, our beloved Mr. Porteous of the English department retired last term. You will have the opportunity later to meet his replacement, Mr. John Keating, himself an honors graduate of this school, and who for the past several years has been teaching at the highly regarded Chester School in London.
Now, Mr. Keating, he proves to be a wonderful teacher. He uses unconventional methods to awaken the students' minds to poetry, beauty, and passion for life as he teaches them his English literature class. But he does so based on a view of the world that says we should pursue life to the full while we're alive, because when it's over, it's over.
Seize the day. Gather ye rosebuds while ye may. Why does the writer use these lines?
Because he's in a hurry.
No. Ding. Thank you for playing anyway. Because we are food for worms, lads. Because believe it or not, each and every one of us in this room is one day going to stop breathing, turn cold, and die. I'd like you to step forward over here and peruse some of the faces from the past. They believe they're destined for great things, just like many of you. Their eyes are full of hope, just like you. Did they wait until it was too late to make from their lives even one iota of what they were capable? Because you see, gentlemen, these boys are now fertilizing daffodils. If you listen real close, you can hear them whisper their legacy to you. You hear it?
Mr. Keating's primary theme in his class is Carpe Diem, seize the day. And one student named Neil fully embraces that philosophy. In fact, it gives him the courage to defy his overbearing father and become an actor. Now, Neil's decision to become an actor against his father's wishes becomes a key part of the story as it unfolds. And it creates quite a tension that causes you, as you're viewing it, to really dislike the dad.
What's up? I just talk to my father. He's making me quit the play at Henley Hall. Acting is everything to me. But he doesn't know. I can see his point. We're not a rich family like Charlie's. But he's planning the rest of my life for me, and he's never asked me what I want.
Have you ever told your father what you just told me? About your passion for acting? You ever showed him that?
I can't.
Why not?
I can't talk to him this way.
And you're acting for him, too.
Neil actually proves to be a great actor. It was his Carpe Diem calling and his seize the day moment. And you kind of hope the dad is going to be sympathetic when he sees him on the stage, but not at all. In fact, it leads to quite a tragedy in the story.
We're trying very hard to understand why it is that you insist on defying us. Whatever the reason, we're not going to let you ruin your life. Tomorrow I'm withdrawing you from Welton and enrolling you in Brayton Military School. You're going to Harvard, and you're going to be a doctor.
But that's 10 more years. Father, that's a lifetime!
Oh, stop it! Don't be so dramatic. You make it sound like a prison term. You don't understand, Neil. You have opportunities that I never even dreamt of, and I am not going to let you waste
them. I've got to tell you what I feel.
I've been so worried
about... Tell me what you feel. Is it more of this acting business? Because you can forget that.
Now, here's a spoiler warning. I'm going to tell you how the film ends, but it's important to understand the process of doing movie nights.
Your favorite movie that you guys have watched and discussed, what's your favorite?
Dead Poets Society.
Now, what did you get from Dead Poets Society?
That sometimes parents aren't always right.
Who did you think was the bad guy in that movie?
The father, because he basically drove his son to suicide because he didn't want him to do the play or anything, even though that's where his passion and his dreams were.
That's right. Neil ends up taking his own life. And as the credits roll at the end of the movie, you find yourself wanting to be angry with the father as the villain of the story for not allowing Neil to become all that he wanted to become. And yet, when you look at it through the lenses of a Christian perspective, you have to ask yourself, well, is something else going on here? Maybe Neil's father isn't the villain. Maybe the problem isn't that Neil couldn't pursue his carpe diem moment in life. Maybe the problem is a worldview, a philosophy that Neil learned that says, listen, when it's over, it's over. And if you can't have all you want in this life and do all you would like to do in this life, then life's not worth living.
Because we are food for worms, lads.
Now, whether you agree or disagree on some of the themes of this film, the discussion would be really enlightening and open up dialogue on what it is we believe as Christians the overarching purpose of our lives should be.
We've become bored with watching actors give us phony emotions. We're tired of pyrotechnics and special effects. While the world he inhabits is, in some respects, counterfeit, there's nothing fake about Truman himself.
Now, The Truman Show is one of the more clever ideas I've ever seen put to film. And it's actually a more serious film than you would think from the movie trailers.
Good morning!
Morning!
Good morning!
Oh, and in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Now, this film has been a great one for discussing the power of deception in our lives, and even for discussing the reality of Satan, which you may find surprising until you watch the film. Truman, played by Jim Carrey, is unaware that he's living on a giant television set and his every action is being broadcast to the whole world. Now, every person in his life is an actor or an actress, including his wife and his best friend. Every scene is a prop, every discussion a scripted setup to see how he'll respond.
1.7 billion were there for his birth. 220 countries tuned in for his first step. The world stood still for that stolen kiss. And as he grew, so did the technology. An entire human life recorded on an intricate network of hidden cameras and broadcast live and unedited 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to an audience around the globe. Coming to you now from Sea Haven Island, enclosed in the largest studio ever constructed, and along with the Great Wall of China, one of only two man-made structures visible from space. Now, in its 30th great year, it's The Truman Show!
Now, some things happen that cause Truman to sense maybe something is not quite right in this world, and senses that people are in on something, and he doesn't know how to explain it. So he starts to explore and ask questions and so forth. Now, you need to know there's another key character in the film that is played by Ed Harris, who's the producer of this television show, and he's behind the scenes. You don't see him for a while, but once he shows up, it's pretty important. And he manipulates Truman's surroundings. He scripts all of the actors. He makes him think that the reality in which he's living is all the reality there is. At one point, in fact, Ed Harris's character, whose name is Christoph, he's the producer, is asked a question about that very thing.
Christoph, let me ask you, why do you think that Truman has never come close to discovering the true nature of his world until now?
We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
Later in that same interview, a caller is very upset with the producer for how they're treating Truman, and they have a little bit of an exchange.
Don't you ever feel guilty? He's not a performer. He's a prisoner. Look at him. Look at what you've done to him.
He could leave at any time. If his was more than just a vague ambition, if he was absolutely determined to discover the truth, there's no way we could prevent him. I think what distresses you, really, caller, is that ultimately, Truman prefers his cell, as you call it.
Probably the most powerful scene in the film is one where Truman and his best friend, who, remember, is an actor, are sitting and talking, and Truman's sharing what he feels and how he senses it's not quite right. And this friend tries to console him, but the camera pulls back and you realize that Christoph, the producer, is actually feeding these lines to Truman's friend.
Well, the point is, I'd gladly walk in front of traffic for you.
The point is, I would gladly step in front of traffic for you, Truman.
And the last thing I'd ever do is lie to you.
And the last thing that I would ever do is lie to you. I mean, think about it, Truman. If everybody is in on it, I'd have to be in on it.
As you're watching the film, it's chilling to realize just how powerful deception is. And when I left the film, and when my boys and I discussed it, we recognized that that's very much like the reality of the world in which we live. There is a deceiver, the scriptures tell us, and that deceiver is throwing everything at us to get us to believe that what we experience in the material world is all there is. There's nothing beyond this. And every time we suspect that there's something more, that there's a bigger meaning, or that there's a bigger reality, he throws more and more deception at us to throw us off track. You can tell how that reflects, of course, a Christian perspective on our lives, and in fact reflects Jesus' own words in John chapter 8, where he talks about Satan being the father of lies, and how the battle we're in is one between truth and deception. When I was in seminary, I had a professor who used to say, if you're abused, you know it. If you're oppressed, you know it. But if you're deceived, you don't know it. And that's what makes deception such a powerful weapon in the hands of our enemy, Lucifer. Well, I consider The Truman Show a great film for setting up that very discussion and perhaps diving into the scriptures on what it means to be living in a world that's occupied by a deceiver who's trying to throw us off the track of the truth.
Well, you have to have a plan going into, I mean, you have to know that you're going into it to discuss it at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you do that, I think that's better. You get a little bit, then everybody will pay better attention.
Before we wrap up, I thought it'd be good to hear a little bit of advice from those who've done this before, such as have a plan.
Yeah, do your homework a little up front before you go in, and then use it as a talking point afterwards and to dig deeper.
One of those pieces of advice is to be up front. If you're a parent or grandparent and you're trying to do this with a teenager, explain that you want to watch the film and discuss its themes from a Christian perspective. Don't use it as an occasion to teach, but rather just to enjoy some good dialogue. Now remember, you probably won't agree on everything, which is fine, but just discussing the themes can strengthen your relationship and stretch your critical thinking skills.
Cautions I'd have to parents is please preview the movie before you watch it when they're trying to kill babies and your 9-year-old is crying and everyone's running out of the room.
Good
Not
tip.
A good one.
14-year-old was running out of the room crying.
Yeah, but they're still making fun of me about that one.
Good tip. Oh. Another piece of advice relates to the fact that most movies nowadays, even if they're only rated PG, have some offensive content, language, perhaps sexuality and violence. Now, there are some tools that can help you as you're trying to screen what movies in terms of content are appropriate. Now, the themes is one thing that you're discussing, okay, what worldview is being addressed. But there's also just practical realities of, I don't want my kids to see that, or I don't want to put that in my mind. I recommend a couple of things. You may want to find a service such as ClearPlay, which provides a tool to screen out the language and the sexual scenes and the intense violence so that you don't have to worry about editing it. Or you may want to pre-screen it yourself and fast-forward through some sections. You can also use a resource that's available online for finding out exactly what content is in various films so that you're not going into it blind and you've got a heads up.
I think as parents we should look and see exactly what the content's going to be. It may not be where we actually get to watch the whole thing ourselves, but at least look at trusted resources to find out if we're not able to see it ourselves first.
Well, most things we always have. There are things we've enjoyed first and thought, wouldn't the kids like these as well?
Right.
It's pretty rare that we watch a movie the first time as a group.
But then there's things that I've seen first and then say that y'all would like.
Like?
Well, I can't think of any now.
Well,
but there are.
Holiday, when you went to see the Mr. Bean.
Oh, but that's Mr. Bean. You can't.
Well, no, but I mean.
What is the worldview of Mr. Bean?
Who would know? Who never says anything?
So the language is not a problem.
To the beach!
To the beach!
Now, you may be thinking, I can't keep up with all this. How do I do this? I don't know how to pose the right questions. Well, never fear. We're here to help. To make this process easier for you, I've set up a special blog with specific movie discussion suggestions and ideas you might find helpful as you begin to view popular stories through the lenses of the Christian faith. Just go to www.movienightchat.com. That's movienightchat.com, and take advantage of those ideas. You can also go to my website, kurtbruner.com, and subscribe to my Twitter feed, and I'll update you whenever a new post is available or a new movie is listed. So why don't you just dive in, get started, try it out, see if you like it, see if it works for your family. Anything that helps you dialogue about spiritual themes and about important values is a good thing, and so we hope this is a tool that you'll find useful. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.